Thank you all for being here. This is the Bitcoin Live Lightning Hour, which we do every Monday. And then on Wednesday, I'm doing another one, which is more regulatory, legal focused, but all related to Bitcoin. Today, we're doing a Blockstream takeover. And there's a bunch of really exciting stuff that is happening in the near future. And I wanted to get y'all in a room to talk about it. I'm super excited to have Matt up here, Christian up here, Lisa, JC, Vivek. Let's just dive in. We got a ton of stuff to talk about. And again, as always, these conversations are super free flowing. So anyone on stage, if you feel compelled to jump in, to offer input, your thoughts, please do so. This is just a smorgasbord of information. I think the most interesting thing for me, there's a couple things that I think we can dive into. We've got Blockstream Greenlight, which I'm super excited about, and I don't feel like I fully understand, so I'm really excited to hear from Christian about exactly how that works and sort of its use cases and the trade-offs that are involved there and who the intended customers are. Is that something that plebs should be excited about and thinking about specifically because it will have an immediate impact on them and the shit that they're doing, or is that more focused on larger entities? I want to also talk about the new Sea Lightning release, Lisa, that I know you had a huge hand in. That's version 0.10.1. And I want to talk about liquidity adds, Bolt 12 offers, and anything else that is exciting there. And then I'd also like to swing around to Taproot activation. So Taproot activates in November, and I want to talk about what that means, the timeline that we can expect to see new things rolling out that people can engage with, and then also what's next. Zcash AnyPrev out seems to be pretty uncontentious, and I want to talk about that, L2, and then anything else we want to dive into. What do y'all think?
Before we start, I just want to remind the audience that this conversation is being recorded and will be available afterwards on the podcast feed if you search Bitcoin Live Spaces in your favorite podcast app. And that goes for all of these Bitcoin magazine spaces going forward. Cheers.
Absolutely. All right, let's dive in. I think you need no introduction, but Matt, you want to give us a quick summary of who you are and why you're fucking awesome? No is an acceptable answer.
I would debate the fucking awesome intro, but I'm a Bitcoiner who loves Bitcoin, and I've been diving down the rabbit hole for a bunch of years now, and I'm mostly focused on education, excited for this conversation.
I'll take it. Lisa, do you prefer Lisa or Nifty on Twitter Spaces?
Either of those works. We can use Lisa. That works great.
Okay. Lisa, do you want to give us and the audience a brief summary of who you are and why you're amazing?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm Lisa. I work at Blockstream on Sea Lightning, which is an open source Lightning implementation. Yeah, and I've been working on some stuff for the past couple of years now on Sea Lightning, specifically like an experimental addition to Lightning at the protocol level that enables dual funding and liquidity add stuff. So hopefully maybe we'll get to talk about that as soon as when we talk about the release. Yeah, sorry, that's a lot for me.
No, that's perfect. I am extremely excited to talk more about the dual-funded channel implementation that you've put in place. For those that are in the audience, when we're talking about dual-funded channels, what that means is the Lightning Network is a system of nodes. It's a layer two technology on top of Bitcoin, which represents sound money, layer one. And then on a layer two technology, the Lightning Network, you're able to basically open what are called channels between two nodes, and then you can update the channel state regularly. And so you can basically send payments back and forth. And then you have this larger network, which of course is a spider web, and you are able to send payments almost instantaneously for very low fees by bouncing them through the network, which we call routing. And when you open channels right now, for the most part, you have to one participant has to put up all of the funds for that channel open. And there are ways of balancing that are trustful. But Lisa has been working on and implemented in Sea Lightning, which is one of the three major implementations of the Lightning protocol, a way to do that trustlessly, and then also to broadcast the intention there so that you can have that running and people can open dual funded channels where you both put up half the funds for each channel. Lisa, would you say it's a fair explanation? What did I miss?
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I think the ability for people to put funds into the channel at start is the big highlight of that. Yeah, which I think you nailed spot on. Yeah.
Pete, I see Christian request.
Oh, fantastic. All right, hold on. Let me pull you up, Christian. Vivek, you want to give us a quick explanation of who you are, what you're about, and don't you dare undersell yourself.
All right. Yeah, I happen to be the lucky guy who works on the sales team for Blockstream, specifically in Liquid, our data feed product with the Intercontinental Exchange, and a joint venture we have with Digital Garage called Crypto Garage, and most recently assisting Christian with Greenlight. Stoked to have him join here and explain more.
Awesome. Christian, welcome to the stage. How's it going?
Yeah, thank you. Let's see if this works now to rush and install the stuff quickly. So yeah, I'm Christian. I have been working on Bitcoin and Lightning basically since it existed back in 2009 and just recently launched Greenlight. So happy to talk about that. And of course, anything Lightning and Bitcoin related, of course.
Love it. All right. Thank you so much. Let's dive in. Let's start with Blockstream Greenlight. I'm super curious. Initially, I thought it was a way for plebs, people to basically run a fully operating Lightning node in the cloud, but then to keep the private keys on locally or on a separate device. It now seems like it's more specific than that. It seems like it's a virtualized node that essentially can only be used to open private channels between entities. Is that correct?
Yeah. So let me maybe take a step back and start from the beginning. Yeah. Basically, we saw that there is a major hurdle to adoption by new users where jumping onto Lightning is really hard, because not only do you have to learn about Bitcoin itself, but also you have to learn about all of the specifics of actually running a Lightning node. And we as a community are always a bit cautious about getting people started the right way and not on custodial services where they might lose their funds, and basically going by the mantra of saying not your keys, not your coins. We have this basically tendency to ask new users to learn everything about how to run a Lightning node before they may even touch anything Bitcoin related. And so that's, of course, a hurdle to adoption. And we thought, hey, can we somehow figure out a way to provide users with a safe by default option to onboard them so that they can see the advantages of using Lightning and using Bitcoin by extension before they actually have to dedicate these hours and hours of learning how to do things correct, but doing so in a non-custodial fashion as well. So we definitely want to play by the mantra of not your keys and not your coins, but we want to take away all of the difficulties that a user might have to actually get things up and running. So Greenlight is basically the solution we came up with, where we take the best of the managed services, where liquidity is managed for you, where channel opening and channel closing is managed for you. You don't even have to learn about these channels eventually, once we have implemented all of the automations that we want to implement. And so you can onboard really easily onto Lightning once you've seen the potential, once you're convinced that Lightning is the solution that you want and we're sure that it is. Only then will you have to actually dig in and learn about the specifics of how to take care of your own infrastructure. Then we will provide you with the data that you need to actually take care of your own infrastructure and become a more self-sovereign participant in the network itself. So that's the core idea of Greenlight.
Interesting. And a bunch of us got together maybe 2-3 months ago and created Plebnet, which is this ragtag group of incredible people who are trying to bring the magic of Lightning to the rest of the world. And it's been really exciting and amazing to see people jump in and teach themselves stuff that I would not have thought that the average person would be willing to or interested in learning. And so I guess I'm curious about, but I think what you're talking about is so important, right? The ability to create these onboarding steps, because right now you still have to be willing to go install, in many cases, build your own node on physical hardware, and then go out, choose a specific, you can either obviously run it on LND and bare metal, but most people use something like Umbral or Raspberry Blitz or something like that. I think the ability to easily spin up virtualized Lightning nodes where you control the private keys is huge. What is the difference between using something like Blockstream Greenlight and spinning up a node on AWS?
I should probably clarify that the nodes that we spin up on Greenlight are actual C Lightning nodes. They are basically the open source C-Lightning project run by us on our infrastructure, backed by a highly available database and provided with a watchtower. So these are fully functional.
It has a watchtower built in. That's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, we do basically just use the IO of Satoshi in the background, and we will automatically configure the node to actually run this on your behalf.
What is IO of Satoshi?
The IO of Satoshi is another open source project that implements a watchtower for a variety of nodes. I think they have support for C-Lightning and maybe LND by now. Oh. They started off with C-Lightning just because it's easy due to our plugin infrastructure. But yeah, in the end, what we do on the server side is we provision a fully functional C-Lightning node on your behalf with state-of-the-art configuration backed by a highly available database. All you actually have to do is you contact our server, tell us, hey, you have access to a private key that you generated yourself. We will never receive that. We will never see that private key. But you basically tell us, hey, I have this private key. Please create a Lightning node for me for that key. And we will spin up a node for you. We will create a database for you. We will configure the watchtowers and all of the rest. And then we tell you, okay, connect to this URL. And once you connect it to this URL, you basically have your own personal node running in the cloud, and the keys are always on your device. And so when you're online, this node is running. When you're offline, we basically power it down because we don't have access to your keys. So if they're asleep, I'm running it. It is a very high efficient, very low resources thing to do for us. And so we can actually scale this to onboard millions of users without much of an expense.
Christian, correct me if I'm wrong. At a high level, the main difference for an average user, if you're comparing it to something like a Raspberry Blitz or an Umbral, is you wouldn't use Greenlight for being a router. You wouldn't use it for routing payments because it's not on 24/7, which is why you have the watchtower. You would use it more as a spender or a receiver, right?
Exactly. The target audience that we have is definitely not the more advanced users that actually already know how to run a Lightning node, that already know what the peculiarities are of running a node, with uptime requirements, like having to check in every once in a while. And so we don't provide public channels exactly for the reason, because these nodes aren't online 24/7 and therefore aren't well suited for routing. That being said, maybe eventually we can provide a sort of pro tier to this kind of service, but at the moment we mostly focus on newbies that don't have all of this experience, don't have all the chops to actually do it themselves. And we go as far as actually encouraging people to offboard into a more self-hosted version once they have acquired all of the skills, have learned about what a channel is, what it means to manage your liquidity, what it means to manage your balances. And so we definitely don't want to retain all of these users. We're happy to let them go and send them on their journey once they have the necessary tools.
When we talk about the Lightning Network, many of us we're super interested in understanding exactly how the technology works. We want to be running these routing nodes. And to bucket, this is an oversimplification, but to bucket Lightning nodes into three categories or three sort of personas, right? You can use the Lightning Network to send essentially free instantaneous payments today by just going and downloading in a fully custodial manner, by going and downloading something like, or non-custodial, Breeze, or if you want to use a custodial solution, Blue Wallet or Wallet of Satoshi. So you don't have to understand any of the stuff that we're talking about right now in order to be able to use Bitcoin and send payments instantaneously, or essentially instantaneously, and for very low fees. Then there's like people who are like, I'm a merchant. I want to sell things to people and I want to use the Lightning Network. And if you're doing that, you can use something like BTC Pay Server if you want to run your own node, or there are services that will allow you to basically outsource that for a very small percentage, which is still way lower than something like Stripe. That's with a P. And then there's like the fully like, I want to be building the infrastructure of this new technology. And then that's where you're running what's called a routing node, where you are not only sending and receiving payments for yourself, but you are also allowing people to send payments through you to other people in the network. So if I have a node, or rather I do have a node, and Matt, who's on stage, has a node, and JC has a node, and I'm sure Lisa has a node, and I know that Vivek has a node, I don't actually have to be directly connected to any of those people to send them payments. I can basically, we're all running routing nodes, JC as well. So I do have a direct connection to the Tales from the Crypt node. I could basically, if I want to send a payment to JC, who I do not have a direct channel opened with, I can bounce it through the Tales from the Crypt node, Matt's node, and then send it to him. And I can do that very easily and in a way that does not require trust.
To add on here, one of the pain points we're seeing right now with Lightning adoption is, well, it's like you just mentioned, the popular ones tend to be custodial in nature. And one of the things I think is really cool with Greenlight is it seems like a fantastic platform for allowing non-custodial mobile wallet developers to basically plug into the Greenlight API so that you have a full node running in on their cloud. Is that the ultimate, is that really one of the ultimate use cases for Greenlight?
Oh, absolutely. One of the target audience that we have is exactly app developers that might not want to or have the ability to learn about the details of how to operate a node safely. And freeing them from having to learn all of these details is exactly one of the targets that we have. We want to give them the ability to concentrate on what they do best, and namely the user experience, the user interface, the interactions that they can provide, the flows for payments, and building more advanced applications on top of it. Look at Sphinx, look at chat-based applications, look at podcasting, look at all of this stuff. And currently you have to learn how to basically bundle a full node into your application. And we want the app developers to concentrate on what they do best, and we take care of what we do best. We know how to run infrastructure. We know how to set this stuff up and make it so that that it runs reliably. And so by basically taking on responsibilities for the parts that each of us does best, we can share this responsibility to speed development up. One thing that we should also point out is that since these are remote nodes, the nodes can actually be shared among any number of applications. If you bundle the node with the application itself, you have to have one wallet that runs Sphinx chat, for example, one wallet that runs your desktop wallet, one app that runs your mobile wallet. And that leads to a fragmentation and a multiplication of the effort that you have to do to keep your balances running. And by concentrating this into one node, where we enable you to move between applications in a frictionless manner. And therefore, it becomes much easier for you to try out a new app, maybe, because there is no such investment into actually getting it running first, because you already have a running backing node. And so we think this enables a whole new way of building Lightning applications, allowing users to move, but also giving developers the ability to quickly get running and not encounter all of these hurdles.
You hit on a common question we get, Matt. A lot of people have been recently asking me, is this for users or like they can't get access? How do they use Greenlight? And typically that's exactly right. We're trying to work with vendors or wallet makers, people that do UX really well so they can focus on that. And we can be the back end for that. Christian does have plans for it to be available to the general public in the future. But as our launch partners are Lastbit and Sphinx.
Yeah, as soon as that blog post came out, I immediately messaged you, Vivek, and was like, give me access now. You were like, nah, dog.
Yeah, and we're sorry we can't onboard everybody.
No, it totally makes sense.
We do have limited capacity, and we want to make sure that everything is working and we fix all of the feedback and we address all of the feedback that we get from our current cohort before letting new people join, so they can maybe find new stuff we should address instead of telling us the same thing that we must address. And our roadmap is so long.
Don't worry, Christian. I'm not going to bug you. I'm just going to continue bugging Vivek until I can.
That was the hidden agenda behind this entire Spaces. Pete just wanted to ask you for access to Greenlight.
What?
No, in the queue here.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I would never. But yeah, message me on the side. No, I think it's a really interesting use case. One question that I still have is, and I think I understand it now, there are solutions that allow you to maintain full custody of your funds like Breeze Wallet, and in a slightly different way, it's more of a two of two, Moon Wallet. And I was trying to figure out, like, what is the difference between Blockstream Greenlight and those kinds of self-custody solutions. And as I understand it now, the massive potential of Greenlight is that, it, as you said, it acts as a back end for developers. It allows someone to say, I want to build an app that where I can basically incentivize people to do a certain thing by paying them with Lightning, but I want it to be part of an ecosystem that I am building. So I'm in the education space. I might basically want to pay students in Lightning for completing certain lessons. And instead of having to say, hey, go download this third-party wallet so that I can, and then connect it up so that I can send you sats for every lesson you complete, I could basically build on top of Greenlight in theory in the near future. And then I would be able to have that completely within my own ecosystem. And most importantly, support them in not having to know exactly how Lightning worked in order to participate in this the system. Is that correct?
Exactly. So all of the applications that we've talked about so far and companies that we are in talks to join the Greenlight ecosystem are exactly in that scenario where they might have a service that they want to offer to somebody, but doing so would require them to be custodians of the funds of the users. And that's not just bad for the users because they're not in control of their own funds, but it's also bad for the companies because for them, it's a liability. Suddenly they have to do KYC and AML. Trust me, many companies don't want that because that's a major burden. And by doing the way we do it in Greenlight, namely having the users always in control of the funds and us just coordinating and proposing changes means that this sort of burden is taken away from them. And that also means that companies that build on top of Greenlight should not have any issues with this kind of thing, freeing them from basically being custodians for their users and allowing them to concentrate on their core business.
I think as an example, JC is up on stage and he and Michael Ted go back and forth about this kind of thing a lot. JC works for Zebedee, which is this really amazing. How would you describe Zebedee, JC?
Yeah, we're building, thanks for the intro, by the way, we're building tools that put Bitcoin into video games. So instead of like your game gold, virtual money, you now have real money, not just for the devs, but for the gamers too. It's a whole ecosystem of stuff. Pretty excited there.
Instead of like in whatever game you're playing, you forcing your users, your customers to buy some arbitrary Chuck E. Cheese tokens like World of Warcraft gold, you could... And you can right now, as a game developer, using the SDKs that they provide, add Lightning payments, that is to say Bitcoin, sats, directly into your game, which is really, it's really cool. One of my favorite things is the CSGO implementation that y'all have, which for a while we were running rooms together that were like, murder your friends for sats, where you basically just go into death matches. And when you kill your friends in CSGO, you earn sats. It's pretty cool. But here's the reason that I brought that up specifically. Right now, I know that Michael Tidd spends a massive amount of time and energy managing the Lightning infrastructure for Zebedee. And if I understand correctly, Greenlight would potentially empower him to offload all of that daily infrastructure management to Greenlight, and then he would be able to focus on some of the other infrastructure issues that any company like Zebedee would have.
That's exactly our goal. We want everybody to take care of the parts they know the best, where they are the experts. And wherever possible, we want to enable them to go for the next million, billion idea and a dollar.
Got it. And then how does that, what is the, from a financial perspective, what is the scaling setup for Blockstream? Like, how does that benefit Blockstream? Because obviously no one can provide a thing for free. The whole idea of the reason I love Bitcoin and the Lightning Network is that the incentives are aligned. Anytime you start subsidizing activities, it tends to go poorly. So how does that work from Blockstream's perspective? Like, is there a percentage that Blockstream takes? How does that work?
I should probably say that none of this is set in stone at the moment. We're still in the phase where we are basically experimenting and seeing how expensive it is basically to run a node on behalf of the users. From what we've seen so far, it's about 1 to 2 orders of magnitude smaller than competing offers where you are running 24/7. Of course, that comes with a couple of trade-offs. The nodes don't run 24/7. Arguably, the nodes aren't needed when the user isn't online, since we have all of the security. yep. features built in. So you basically open your app, we spin up your node in less than a second, you would perform your payment or you receive your payment. And then after a couple of minutes of inactivity, we basically shut down the node again. So that allows us to massively reduce the costs of actually operating these nodes for you. And we will definitely forward these cost savings to the users.
Yeah.
Now, what this actually will look like, we don't know. It might be a monthly subscription, or ideally, we would actually hide the costs in the compensation methods that are built into Lightning, namely routing fees, which would have the additional advantage of actually being a built-in mechanism that we already have and be completely transparent. So you don't use your node to receive or send payments. You're not paying. So a pay-per-use model would be awesome.
Oh, God,
and it's
so
very
cool.
much aligned in with the Lightning ethos. We're not sure we can get there quite yet, but hopefully we can find a way to make this easy to understand for users and easy to charge from our point of view. But ultimately, we don't want to make this a huge profit entry in our books. This is more about kickstarting the community and basically enabling the Lightning payments at a far bigger scale, onboarding users into this ecosystem and basically growing the pie larger for everybody. And we might end up then building services on top of it that might be monetized. So very much still in flux, but we'll see what the future brings.
Yeah, that makes sense. And again, just for the audience, running a node takes an incredible amount of time and energy. So when you hear people like Erin, who's in the audience, who is an incredible Lightning node operator, she spends, I don't want to say hours a day, it's probably not that much, but we've all spent in PlebNet, and I've certainly spent dozens, if not over hundreds of hours learning about all this stuff and learning how to manage it. And then on a daily basis, I go in and I tweak settings, I change my routing fees. So there is a high cost to running a node just from a time perspective. And then also, of course, there's electricity. If you're going to be hosting these things on AWS separate from something like Greenlight, you have your AWS costs. The thing that's so compelling to me about Greenlight is that they're able to abstract away a lot of the back-end issues. And then because of these innovations, like using private channels and spinning down the node when it's not active, they're actually able, and then of course, just the scale that they are able to attain, they're able to basically decrease costs overall while still allowing users to maintain custody of their funds, which is really fucking cool. I'm excited, man. Really excited.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about our newest sponsor. This show is brought to you by Ledin.io. I have been super, super impressed with the guys over at Ledin. I've actually known the co-founders, Adam and Maurizio, for a very long time. I've had the pleasure to watch them build Ledin up from a tiny, tiny startup to now a super impressive institutional grade Bitcoin and crypto lender. Y'all, I'm so impressed with these guys. They are offering some of the best rates out there. I don't think anyone even comes close to touching them. You can get 6.1% APY on your first two Bitcoin that you deposit into Ledin interest accounts, and you can get 8.5% on USDC deposits. I mean, I know all the competitors, they're not even close. If you're going to put your crypto and your Bitcoin into an interest account, Ledin is by far the best. And on top of that, like I said, these guys are hardcore Bitcoiners and they know the products and the services that Bitcoiners want and appreciate. They came up with B2X. It allows you to put your Bitcoin in, they leverage it up, and you can, with one click of the mouse, get twice the exposure to Bitcoin. So if you're super bullish, Ledin has you covered with a super, super easy way to get leverage with B2X. And then on top of that, they know that Bitcoiners care about your reserves. They know that Bitcoiners don't like under-reserved and not full-reserved financial institutions. So they are pushing the frontier in transparency in the digital asset lending space. And they are the first digital asset lender to do a full proof of reserves and proof of attestation through a Mariano LLC, a public accounting firm. So the Ledin guys, they know what Bitcoin is like. They are legit. I encourage you guys to check them out. Do your own research and go to Ledin.io. That is Ledin.io and learn more. Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about The Deep Dive. The Deep Dive is Bitcoin Magazine's premium market intelligence newsletter. This is a no fluff, hard-hitting, incredible newsletter going deep into the market, helping you understand what's happening with derivatives, what's happening on-chain, what's happening in macro, what's happening with the narrative, and what's happening with the tech. My man, Dylan LeClaire, is an absolute savant. He is making his name known in the Bitcoin community, getting shout outs left and right, getting on podcasts left and right. And him and his team are bringing you everything that you need to know about Bitcoin. You don't even have to be on Bitcoin Twitter. You can ignore every other newsletter. This is the newsletter to rule them all. Go over to members.bitcoinmagazine.com, sign up today. And if you use promo code MACRO, you get a full month for free. You have nothing to lose. What are you waiting for? Sign up, see the incredible work that Dylan and his team are putting out. And if you don't like it, just unsubscribe. You don't pay a dime. But if you do, it's going to be well worth the sats in investment in understanding Bitcoin and gaining the confidence to continue to invest in Bitcoin and making the right moves around Bitcoin. And it's going to be well worth every single Satoshi. Again, can't recommend it enough. That is members.bitcoinmagazine.com, promo code MACRO. Do it today.
I quickly wanted to add, if like there's any wallet developers or UX focused people that are interested, definitely reach out to me or Christian. Happy to see how we can get you guys set up and hopefully work together. Christian, do you want to add anything that may be helpful on compatibility, like APIs, the gRPC stuff, anything?
Yeah, so if you've ever worked with a gRPC interface, and if you have ever run an LND node, you have, then you're probably the target audience for us, because all we require is basically a tiny little bit of code to run with the app. That's the part that is signing requests from the nodes and verifying that they're authentic and they actually come from the user. And other than that, it is just calling gRPC methods. That being said, we're also looking into how we can enable REST APIs in the future and a number of other interfaces that might be interesting. We're even looking into running the signer as a WASM binary, which would allow us to have a pure browser based wallet that nevertheless never shares any private keys with a node. So loads and loads of stuff to come. But for now, if you talk to your PC, you're probably also able to build a wallet on top of Greenlight.
Very cool. Is there anything else that anybody up on stage wants to speak to or say regarding Greenlight? Otherwise, I want to talk about the new C-Lightning release.
I think a good segue would be to, I guess, have Christian explain what was carved out for Greenlight regarding HSMD. That was one of the release notes.
First of all, let's go. What is HSMD? Let's start there.
Yeah, basically, a C-Lightning node is a very modular design where you could swap out individual parts without having to recompile or even without writing code. And so one of the parts that we had to build for Greenlight is a replacement for the key management and signing part called HSMD. HSMD has always been a bit of an aspirational name since it's an acronym for Hardware Security Module Daemon. Of course, not running on actual hardware. And depending on what your notebook is, it's not even that secure. But we were able to basically have swap out this part. And instead of having a local signer to the node, it basically takes requests coming from C-Lightning and ships it over to the user device for signing. And so I think my only contribution to this release cycle, sorry, Lisa, was basically to refactor this code in such a way that we can run it outside of the C-Lightning context itself and therefore enable the reuse of this signing and verification part of C-Lightning. I should also mention that this Greenlight is actually running stock C-Lightning nodes. And eventually we will have an export function that allows you to take care of your own node. Basically, you can install C-Lightning, import our export, and be running the latest release of C-Lightning, which was captained by Lisa. And so I think she's probably best to tell you about all of the MTAs, which I find extremely interesting.
One thing I just want to say again for the audience is when we're talking about C-Lightning is a specific implementation of the Lightning protocol. And the Lightning protocol is a set of standards that anyone can build out an implementation that as long as it meets certain standards, it basically will be interoperable. So there's LND, which is one implementation of Lightning. And then at Blockstream, they have developed C-Lightning, which is another implementation. And again, as Christian was just saying, it uses forgive me if this is the wrong term, but I would say a plugin architecture. And then there's Eclair, which is yet another implementation. And then there's people are really excited. I'm certainly excited about Rust Lightning, which is yet another implementation. So these are basically different systems that use an agreed upon standard in order to be able to communicate interoperably. If my node, which is running LND, my node can still open channels to Lisa's node, which is running C-Lightning, and then we can also communicate with a node that's running Eclair. But Lisa, I'd love to hear, you want to give us a high-level overview?
Yeah, so high-level overview of stuff we shipped in this release. I think the most exciting kind of like the headlining thing are some stuff that is, for now, specific to C-Lightning. So as P was talking about, there's a bunch of different, four, maybe five implementations of Lightning right now. C-Lightning is called C-Lightning because it's written in C. I think you talked about that. Sorry. Yeah, part of the spec process is that someone will propose a change to how Lightning works. A couple of things that we've added to C-Lightning were actually talked about as a group with the other implementation teams at a implementation meeting a couple of years ago, and we decided that these were things we wanted to add to the spec. So over the last, couple of years, I've been working on, and Rusty have been working on different proposals and making them implement into the Lightning spec. So this implementation or this version of C-Lightning in a release, we had a couple things that were new and exciting. Probably the biggest one is something called liquidity ads. I've been working on this for a long time now. We had to get dual funding done before we could make liquidity ads reality. So the last version of C-Lightning, when it shipped, it had a hard to use version of C-Lightning. This version of C-Lightning includes a plugin, which makes it a lot easier for someone to set up your node. Yeah, okay, so we had a spec meeting. We decided there were some things we wanted to add to the protocol. I and Rusty and other people have been working on kind of those proposals in the interim since then. On C-Lightning, in this last release, we shipped one of the first implementations of a basically spec update proposal called Liquidity Add. What's so cool about it is that, first of all, we had to get dual funding done. So the last release of C-Lightning, the 0.10, included a very first implementation of the dual funding stuff. This version adds something on top of that called liquidity ads, which I'm super excited about. So what liquidity ads are is it gives your node the ability to say, hey, I've got some extra money that I'd like to put into Lightning channels, but I'd like for other people who want to open channels to pay me to put this money into a channel. So what you do is you set up your C-Lightning node to advertise to the entire Lightning gossip network. So this is every Lightning node that is connected will get this message at some point that says, basically says, hey, I'm node, this is my name, this is how you can find me, and here is how much I want you to pay me in order for me to put money into a channel when you open one with me. And so that's what we're calling the liquidity ad. What's so cool about that, though, is that it's pretty lightweight, so that it doesn't take a whole lot to set it up. In C-Lightning, we've added a new plugin called the Funder plugin, which you just set some parameters on it, and that's all you need to set it up. And then when someone goes to open a channel with you, they say, hey, I'd like to request that your node add, let's say, 1,000,000 sats to this channel. I'm going to put 1,000,000 sats in. If the other node happens to have liquidity available and they're still handing it out and they decide they like you, then they will also put money in the channel and you'll pay them a little bit for it, whatever rates they said it would. And then you'll have a channel open that has 1,000,000 sats that you've put in and then 1,000,000 sats that you've paid them to put into this channel, all in a single transaction and done basically just through the open channel command or fund channel command on C-Lightning. So it's pretty lightweight and it doesn't add a lot to the existing flow, just a couple of new parameters, but it does require a little bit of, I think the nice thing about liquidity ads is that when you have dual funding, the problem then is who do I know is going to put money in this channel with me? Liquidity ad makes it easier to coordinate finding someone who's willing to put money into a channel with you. So basically, this is a way that you as a Lightning node can buy inbound liquidity just from other peers on the network that you're able to find just by looking through your available gossip messages that your node has received. So yeah, that's I think that's a pretty good overview of how it works. Did I miss anything on liquidity ad stuff? I don't think so.
It takes the idea that we have with the mega hubs and circles and all of these kinds of human coordination, and it can take them and decentralize them. Instead of meeting on Reddit, instead of meeting on a loop or whatever, just collect these ads and then decide based on those information whom to open channels with. And you can do you can automate that, and it's decentralized. There is no censorship in anything of that here, and so it becomes just this much, much more robust way of coordinating the creation of channels.
Yeah, I'm so excited about that. There's obviously Ring of Fire, which is basically a way to, you go in and you create this like large ring of people who, like, I open a channel to you, you open a channel to Matt, Matt opens a channel to Lisa, Lisa opens a channel to JC, opens a channel to Vivek, and then you have this liquidity ring. And then, of course, in Plebnet, we've basically just got this like free-for-all spider web where we're all just opening channels and then optimizing and killing channels that don't provide value and routing, and then we just are brute-forcing it, so to speak. But that still requires a ton of effort, right? Like somebody wants to open a dual funded channel, and because I am currently on LND, I'm using the Balance of Satoshis option by Alex Bosworth, but that still requires me to do my own research. So I have to reach out, I have to go through, do an analysis of the output of described graph, and then choose potential partners that are going to increase my centrality and other heuristics. Have they opened a bunch of new channels recently, which would imply that they need inbound? And then I have to find them, message them, and then say, hey, do you want to open a dual funded channel? Or do you, which is a trustless thing, or do I want to do a trustful balanced channel, which is very risky, and do, you know, we call like a ghetto submarine swap where you're sending funds on chain or over Lightning and then reimbursing someone on chain. Again, my point is that takes a lot of effort. And the idea that there is just this, that you can analyze the gossip messages for people that are saying, I am interested in opening dual funded channels trustlessly, and here is how much liquidity I can provide. That's amazing. And I think that will not only reduce the human cost, that is to say the time that it takes, but it will massively improve the robustness of the network, because the majority of channels are not dual funded, whether trustfully or trustlessly, and that creates an inefficiency. One thing that I'm curious about though is, how does, when you talk about automating those channel opens, as I said, for me, I'm pretty picky when it comes to which nodes I want to open channels with. Will it be possible, or is it possible, to set heuristics around which channels or which types of nodes one is willing to open dual funded channels with?
Yeah. So the plugin that we shipped with this version of CLightning.1, it included this plugin that I mentioned earlier called the Funder plugin. Funder plugin basically runs your policy for when you get an inbound channel request to add money. It like has a policy built that checks this node against. It's pretty simplistic. So the Funder plugin basically has very like low-key policies that you can set up. Like, I only want to fund a channel above a certain amount, or I'm trying to think, there's a few other ones in there, but they're pretty...
Period as well, right? Essentially like how long the channel will stay open.
Oh, but that's part of the lease. That's a little bit different than the policy when you're trying to decide whether or not you want to lease your money to someone. But I'm saying you could add other ones. Like, I haven't. Pull requests are definitely welcome on Funder. People have stuff they want to add to it. Or you could really write your own policy, but that's probably going to be a decent amount of work. But anyways, yeah, like you'd have to add those. You'd have to add some heuristics into it. It has a couple, but they're not super fancy. Maybe like a more obvious one would be like, check out what the centrality of this node is. I think what would be really awesome, and maybe I think like a good opportunity for a developer in this space, would be now that we've got this way of finding peers that are offering liquidity, or that once you're offering liquidity, someone sends you an offer for it. It would be really nice about the centrality of this node, or if I open this channel, how is that going to change my ability or like relationship to the larger Lightning graph in general? That kind of information you could probably build, or if there's like a service and you could just like ping automatically every time like a request came in, that would be really nice, I think. Yeah.
But it sounds like that is 100% possible. Just we have to build it.
Yep, definitely.
Love it. That's amazing.
I think RTL also potentially would be another project that'd be well positioned to do or build that type of offering.
Absolutely. They already have some of the infrastructure required for that, I guess.
Let's see. What else is in the release this time? Should we talk about other stuff or do we have more questions about liquidity ad stuff?
I just wanted to give a high level overview. I think for noobs that come from the CoinJoin space, they could think of it as this is a unique implementation that doesn't have a coordinator. So you could think of the paradigm shift of it moving from someone like Wasabi and Samurai Wallet to a join market type of offering. Would you say that's fair, Lisa?
I really don't know as much about join market as I should, but yes, I think that is
maybe correct. That can win. Privacy expert. I know Yates expert.
Yeah, definitely not an expert, especially with this great crowd we got on the speaker stage right now. But basically the general premise is, if correct me if I'm wrong, is it would be awesome if we had a way to log into it and you could on the fly set up dual funded channels with people you don't know to basically break the common input ownership heuristic. So you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a single person opening a channel versus two people providing inputs to open a channel.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. Right now, because of the change outputs, you could probably figure out when there's one versus two people participating in it, but that's really just a matter of configuration and settings. But yeah, all the tools are there. And yeah, when you do these dual funded liquidity ad open, they are, I wouldn't call them coin joins exactly, because the change makes it possible to figure out for the most part roughly whose funds belong to whose, but it definitely makes it a lot harder. And it definitely does the single input, breaks the single input heuristic stuff or single user input things.
But thinking out loud, if a change is a concern, wouldn't the best implementation be something like a couple coin join rounds happen first and then each party does a full UTXO spend at the end of the coin join rounds to open the dual funded channel, and then you wouldn't have any change?
Yeah, not having change is definitely the best way to get around it, for sure. And I think the protocol that we updated to make dual funding happen is really freaking flexible. I think there's really a big opportunity there for someone to build a bridge basically between existing CoinJoin market, join market, and this ability to open Lightning channels. I think that would be cool. I don't know exactly what that would look like, but I think all the base parts are there with the dual funding protocol.
The work on dual funding has been going on for a long while, but it is an absolutely fascinating proposal that absolutely has to make it in the specification, because besides laying the groundwork for dual funding, it also has all of the components that are required to eventually have splice in and splice out, which will allow you to actually do on-chain payments from a Lightning channel, or even to bump up the capacity of an existing channel. And these then become really flexible, because all of a sudden you can keep the entirety of your Lightning channels, keeping the mobility, keeping the flexibility of paying with them in real time in a private manner, but still retaining the ability to do on-chain payments at a whim's notice without having to actually close channels, without having to say, okay, now I know I need to tear down this channel because all of my funds are off-chain. You can actually do on-chain payments from a Lightning channel or refill if your channel has been emptied before.
Yeah, and this is something.
Dual funding is but the first step in this direction, which gives us a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of us have had the experience of. As you start off and you open your first channel and you're like, 100,000 sats is enough. And then within 5 minutes, you're like, oh, fuck, all right. So 500,000 sats. And then you have to increase it to 1,000,000 sats. And then, you go up from there. And everyone ends up asking, so how do I increase the size of my existing channels? And the answer is, well, one day you'll have splicing, but for now you just have to close it out. So that's two on-chain transactions, because opening channels in Lightning and closing channels require on-chain transactions. One thing I know everyone on the stage understands that, I'm just restating it for the audience. One thing that it isn't clear to me is when we talk about splicing, one, how does that relate to, or does it relate at all to L2? My first question.
Ooh, L2 questions are for me. Since I've been annoying everybody talking about the advantages of L2, and now I get these questions a lot. So
Splicing doesn't actually require L2 in the first place. L2 would just make it a lot easier because of the model that that L2 has is does away with the asymmetry that we have in Lightning today, which does add a lot of complexity because the versions of the state that you and I have are not identical, right? One has the hooks as you, and my version has the hooks for you to penalize me. And this means that whenever we perform any sort of advanced protocol, we have to take care that we take into account this asymmetry. Whereas with L2, a lot easier. Can probably go into details, but I usually get some blank stares at some point.
Bitcoiners, I am so excited to tell you about the Bitcoin 2022 conference. You guys, Bitcoin 2021 was absolutely a smash hit success. It was over 13,000 Bitcoiners coming together, breaking the barriers on who can come together and celebrate freedom, celebrate Bitcoin, and the energy was absolutely electric. Unfortunately, it was just oversubscribed. There's just people flowing out everywhere. And this year, we are learning. We are making the conference bigger and better. We are moving over to the Miami Beach Convention Center, and we are going to be throwing a massive 4-day festival for Bitcoin, celebrating Bitcoin, bringing together the greatest minds in Bitcoin and the greatest businesses in Bitcoin. And lastly, the culture of Bitcoin all together. We have a 4-day extravaganza planned for you guys for Bitcoin 2022. Day one is going to be industry day. It is a day where you can buy a special ticket in order to just mingle and make business deals happen. Day two and three is going to be a full-blown Bitcoin conference. This is our main conference. This is going to be on April 7th and 8th. And then lastly, we have the Sound Music Festival day four. Imagine going to Coachella, but for Bitcoin. There's going to be very few talks. It's going to be all about the culture of Bitcoin. It's going to be all about hanging with your fellow plebs. It is going to be an absolutely amazing time. There's going to be Bitcoin musicians, Bitcoin artists, and all your favorite Bitcoiners, and just an amazing environment to party and just see it all, soak it all in, and to get people to realize that a Bitcoin world, a world filled with Bitcoin people doing Bitcoin things, is the world that they want to live in. That's what Bitcoin 2022 is all about. That is what the Bitcoin conference is all about. That's what Bitcoin magazine is all about. So it is going to be a celebration of Bitcoin, the Bitcoiners, and this amazing movement that is going to make the world a better place. Go to b.tc/conference. Learn more about the Bitcoin conference. Learn more about all the amazing things that are happening in Miami around the Bitcoin conference and buy your tickets. And guess what? If you buy your tickets with Bitcoin, you save $100 on all the tickets and $1,000 on the whale pass. So if you want the VIP pass, the big kahuna, if you buy with Bitcoin, you save $1,000. That's a lot of sats. So go and do it right now today. Don't wait. Prices are only going up. This is going to be a can't miss event. Bitcoiners, let's take a break from the content. And I want to tell you about Coolbix. Coolbix is an awesome Bitcoin hardware wallet that's been around for a really long time. They are building an amazing Bitcoin wallet called the Cool Wallet Pro. The Cool Wallet Pro is state of the art Bitcoin hardware wallet technology. Its form factor is like a credit card. You can put it into your wallet and it is designed to go with you on the go. So that way, even when you're on the go, you can have the benefit of a two-factor hardware wallet design when you're trying to spend your Bitcoin. So you can have your Bitcoin wallet UX on your phone and make it really easy to scan, decide what you want to do, but then you sign with a Coolbit X, which is in your back pocket. It is tamper-proof. It is waterproof. It is flexible. It has an awesome secure element in it. And it is a really awesome way in order to have some more flexibility, yet security when you're taking your Bitcoin on the go. I personally am a fan of this idea of making Bitcoin into a medium of exchange and making it into something that people use. I know it's going to take time, but they are working on the UX for making that possible in as secure a way possible. So have some peace of mind. Check out the Cool Wallet Pro from Coolbix, and thank you to them for sponsoring this podcast.
I just want to go so deep in the weeds immediately, but I want to also keep us at a level where, you know, those who aren't quite as deep in the weeds as we are can still enjoy and track in the conversation. So to be clear, and everyone on stage, please correct me as I fuck this up, but we've talked about a number of different things that are actively being implemented, that are in the process of being implemented. I think it might be useful to distinguish between exactly what we mean at a high level between improvements like L2 versus SIGHASH any prev out versus dual funded lightning channels. Maybe Christian or Lisa, if you can give a, like, how should people categorize these types of improvements in their own minds? Basically, a Bitcoin improvement proposal versus something that we're talking about in terms of Lightning and the standards there.
Yeah, so I think we do have a couple of levels here that are worth distinguishing. The first one, of course, is Bitcoin itself. Bitcoin, as we've seen and loved it for a number of years now, and that forms the basis for all of this. Bitcoin exposes a certain interface that allows us to build stuff on top of it. And back in 2017, we had to change some of that interface using the SegWit proposal, which was activated pretty much 4 years ago to the day. I think it was first August. And so that was a very slow process, nevertheless was successful. And that allowed us to build some really advanced things on top, among which Lightning, of course. Back in 2015, the current Lightning implementers met and we decided to, instead of each working on their own niche and a small incompatible protocol, we decided to basically pool our efforts and build a common protocol that would be interoperable between all of us. And that's where basically the bolts come from, the basis of Lightning technology. That is basically a collection of documents that describe what to do in certain cases, how to communicate, how to write our messages and how to interpret them. And that is a set of documents that keeps on growing as we build on top. And usually the process for making a change to it, making an improvement, is by creating a proposal, discussing it with the rest of the implementers, maybe change it completely depending on what other people think. And eventually it comes to a stage where we start implementing it, building it into our implementations. And as soon as two implementations have implemented it, we can take the proposal and basically apply it to the bolts, and it becomes part of the specification. Many of the things that we're talking about today are still in the proposal phase. So we are looking for another implementation to basically replicate our results, tell us that they are okay, that they are as good as they can get, or they at least couldn't find any flaws in them. And once we have the second, then they become part of the specification. And so that's the highest level of current churn work, right?
Love. Yeah, that sounds great. I like that. I was going to say, I like how we compare it to like anyone who like pays attention to research in the sciences. They have something of a replication crisis where someone will run an experiment and publish the results, and then no second team is able to like ever replicate what the original team found in their original experiment. So with the spec process and Lightning, we're really trying to avoid that, right? And making it such that until another like team basically has been able to reproduce the same working software from the spec, that those proposals are considered just that, just proposals. It's cool.
Yeah, and in C Lightning, we take that very serious. All of the things that we implement in C Lightning are always behind feature flags, always behind compilation guards, so that until these proposals get enacted, because we think it's very, very bad for the community if you basically take your initial idea and basically run with it without anybody else having a way to give feedback, to maybe encourage changes, to maybe abstract a bit and make it such that it actually fits everybody. And if you do that, in the end, you end up with a cool feature right away, of course, but you are going to pay this price of compatibility later on because, well, you basically had no second pair of eyes look into it. And there might be flaws that you haven't seen, or there might have been better ways to build it. And so we take it very seriously. And that's also why things like dual funding and the liquidity ads are behind feature flags.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that more because I know that there is, I think an interesting example of this is the trustless dual funding implementation that exists in the Balance of Satoshi's tool versus what y'all are building over at Blockstream. And I'd love to understand that a little bit more. Like, when you say that the danger there in building a cool tool and shipping it, it seems like, is the argument that one, or how do you balance that with innovation? If there's a thing that one, if there's functionality that can be created outside of a spec as a personal tool, I guess I'm just trying to figure out where that balance lies. Would you argue that the...
Well, go ahead. Yeah, this is definitely specific to the specification. And when it comes to the protocol itself, so that is where interoperability is really important, right? If we speak to one dialect of dual funding and the counterparty speaks another dialect of dual funding, we will just not make any progress. We will not be able to understand each other. That is different when you build tools on top of the protocol itself that don't touch the protocol itself. If you have a cool application that can be built on top of the current infrastructure that Lightning nodes provide, that is definitely desired. And we would like to encourage everybody to do that and try it. But as soon as you try to push these things down into the protocol and make them part of the specification, then it becomes really very much this trade-off of we need to actually talk the same language. And the protocol isn't anything else than a definition of how we should communicate and what the shared language is.
Oh, so got it. Okay.
As long as it's a tool, perfectly fine. We would love to see more of them. But if you actually change the language that we speak on the network, then it becomes time to actually start a discussion about, is this the best we can do? Is this something that is desirable for the wider network? And should this be part of the specification in the first place?
Got it. Okay. So, and I'm not interested in calling specific people out, but can you give an example of the types of discussions that have happened where, or things that you view as examples where that has gone, there have been appropriate tools built out versus situations where there have been things that have been pushed at the protocol level where, or at the standards level, where in retrospect, it was a bad idea. You can say no, by the way. I'm trying to get a better sense of what is considered to be, or what y'all view as appropriate versus not appropriate.
It's really hard to actually think of a specific incident that we had that was negative. I think we all agree that all of the Lightning teams are doing excellent work and it's a really friendly community. So I don't have a concrete example.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Christian, I think it's disappointing because what I was imagining, I know that y'all have to go to the standards meeting after this, I was imagining that basically Blockstream rolls up in like a green crazy car from like Mad Max. You all jump out, you're wearing like motorcycle outfits and you have paint that you like smear all over each other. And then over at Lightning Labs, like they come in on like a hot air balloon. And then the people that built out Eclair, they all jump it. And then you all pull out like lightsabers and you start battling it out. It sounds like that's not actually what happens though. Is that?
Sadly, no, it's friendly. We will try to do better.
Yeah, please.
I think we need to coordinate our outfits for the next IRT meeting there. Like, I'll show up with the right t-shirt on. I don't know. For those of you who aren't familiar with IRC, it's a text-based chat client, so no one would be able to tell that we're wearing a matching outfit. But I would know. It would make me feel better about representing Team Seam Lightning. And those are open meetings, by the way. They happen on IRC in /lightning-dev on IRC, the libera.chat, know what you call it, host network of IRC. And I think ours today, the time is, it's going to happen here soon. It happens in an hour and about an hour and a half. So that's, I think that's 4 p.m. East Coast time.
Lisa, will you tweet out a link to how people can participate in that?
Sure.
Maybe, I don't know if that's a huge ask. I'm just imagining there's like how to get
access. Huge ask, Pete. People are going to show up there and disrupt the meeting, ask how to run a node. It's going to be terrible.
Yeah, look, I have some wallet questions that I really want to get answered in that.
My hesitation is mostly that I don't know how to tweet out an IRC channel. Maybe this is like by design. Maybe this explains why we hold them over there.
I retract my ask.
No, I'll tweet it out. I'll put out a tweet, but I'm not saying that it's going to be easy for you to get on it, even with the information. Anyway, I guess I could probably start tweeting those out more. Those are much easier to read. They're just like text chats. Maybe a better thing to do would be to post. I'll definitely also post, now that we're talking about it, the archive of all of those chat logs.
That's probably a great idea.
Okay, great. Yeah.
You got to keep people like me, that is to say the riffraff, out. Otherwise, we will.
Arms distance, P. Arms distance.
Good point. All right.
We talked a little bit about L2, but then I'd like to talk about Sighash Anyprev out, given that Taproot is probably going to activate in a couple months. And like you said, P, it's one of the more less contentious future soft forks. And it'll have some cool things perhaps down the road with update mechanisms and also some other cool stuff Christian had worked on called Channel Factory. So
yes,
while we have the wizard in our presence, I would love the 101. Thank you, Christian.
Hit us.
Yeah, Sighash Anyprev out is what initially was called Sighash Noen. Made, 2018, based on a previous never written up proposal by Joseph Poon and Taj Dryja, the OGs when it comes to Lightning. And the idea is basically to make it possible for us to move in certain ways such that we can rebind them to a different output. The way that that Lightning network currently works is that basically we have a set of transactions in our back pockets, and when we decide to close a channel, we take one of these transactions out of our back pocket and send it to the blockchain. And there are two options, basically. Either we take the latest transaction we agreed upon, and then we do a perfectly fine close together and we settle our channel on chain. Or I try to cheat and take an older transaction out of my back pocket and try to enact that. Maybe I had more funds in that channel at that time. Maybe I even had all of the funds in the channel at that time, or I want to undo a payment that I routed for somebody else. And so there needs to be some way for my counterparty to react if I try to enact an old state. If I try to cheat, my counterparty should be able to react to that. As the current mechanism is called, works is basically by having a pre-canned response to any of my possible actions. So if I take out state 101, then there's a reaction 101 tailor-made for that penalize me. That means that basically if I want to be able to react to any reaction to any single state we ever agreed upon. And that's one of the issues that we have today, is basically that the watchtower or I would have to track an ever-increasing set of transactions just in case my counterparty were to release that the transaction to which this is a reaction. And what we do with any prevout is basically have a wildcard reaction to any prior state. So what we can build with any prevout is basically, as soon as we agree on state, let's say 101, I can, for once, because the reaction that I got for 101 can be applied to any of the prior ones. And this is, aim comes from, this is matches any previous output that has a certain format. Namely, it has a matching, it is asking for a matching signature, and it is asking for maybe for a pre-image or whatever. But as long as that matches, my wildcard response works for any of these prior states. And this builds the basis for a protocol that we wrote up also in 2018 called L2, where instead of punishing the counterparty if they ever try to cheat, we just correct them. And so my counterparty has forgotten some state and he now publishes a prior state, let's say 50. We were previously at state 101. All I have to do is basically I see that he is publishing state 50, and I just take 101 and override his attempted close. And by doing that, what we do is we skip ahead all of these intermediate states and go right to the latest state we agreed upon. And I might not penalize them, but we can actually continue working using that channel without actually having this channel be idle until it gets resolved. And there's other proposals like state chains and like channel factories that we can build on top of this, exactly because we no longer have this asymmetry that the transactions that I hold are different from the transactions the counterparty hold. Instead, we always have identical transactions. And this limitation of having to know whom to penalize if something ends up on chain is no longer the case. And therefore, we can have multi-party channels that have 15 participants or 100 participants, and we can all pool our funds and we can then freely move them among ourselves or even route payments for other people over these multi-party channels and do some really fancy stuff that I probably shouldn't go into, but let's say channel factories are definitely a possibility. And you can just increase a lot the utility of the funds that you have without having this asymmetry where you have, oh, I have to have a weapon in place if this guy is misbehaving, or I have to have a weapon in place when this guy misbehaves. No, we just ratchet forward to a state that we actually agreed upon, and we can continue using that channel.
Interesting.
So lots of stuff there.
Oh, I was going to say, I think one really cool thing about these new L2 channels with the ability to roll forward to the best state or most recent state is it gets rid of the penalty stuff. So right now in Lightning, if you accidentally roll back to a state that you've moved past, like something in the past, there's the possibility that you might lose a lot of money if you accidentally publish the wrong state. Whereas in L2, the actual penalty for publishing the wrong state is a lot less terrible. In fact, in theory, the worst thing that'll happen is that someone else will publish the correct state and you end up with the correct balance that you're supposed to have anyway, which is kind of cool. I think it's really nice, I think, to be able to remove opportunities for losing money from Lightning. And I think L2 is a really important one of those.
One of the major advantages of L2 is exactly this. Data loss no longer is deadly, basically. So if today you basically take your node and you go boating and it falls into the sea, then you were lucky because you have a backup. You can't actually restore that backup if it wasn't perfectly up to date to the second that you dropped your phone, because there might have been another agreed upon state in between. And if you now try to restore your node and try to continue using that state, it is basically indistinguishable for your peer whether you just had a lobotomy or whether you whether you actually are trying to cheat, because they look identical.
Sorry.
So data loss right now is deadly.
Christian, I'm still just kind of fixated on the idea that when you go boating, you take your Lightning node with you. I'm imagining like a sat phone that's the size of a brick that's connected directly to your Lightning node.
I'm actually getting my sailing license exactly for that reason right now.
Perfect, perfect. That seems like a good idea. Rafael, who was in the audience a little bit ago, he is a drone pilot, and he attached a Raspberry Lightning node to his drone. And of course, it only flies for 5 minutes before catastrophically failing, but I'm fully in support of it. And it sounds like L2 would empower that.
Yeah. So one of the downsides, of course, of all of this innovation happening is that the boating accident is no longer a good excuse if you run your Greenlight node, because we are actually backing up on your behalf. So you can recover just by knowing your seed phrase.
But what about the private keys? What if I carry my private? What if I carry my signing device, the device that stores my private keys, onto the boat with me?
You can basically reinitialize the signing device just using your seed phrase.
Oh, interesting. Wait, but then is the seed phrase stored on the Greenlight servers?
Nope.
I see. Okay, but what you're saying is the fact that I have my seed phrase written down on tissue paper, that would still be a vector for losing all my funds when I go jet skiing.
You would have to lose all of the copies of your seed phrase.
Oh, but it's still possible, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but okay. basically, you can reinitialize the signer with your seed phrase, whether you have stored that on a sheet of metal or in some bag. Yeah, through a challenge response mechanism, we can assert that you are who you say you are. Yeah, sorry, that excuse of going sailing is not going to work much longer.
Jokes aside, the problem is right now in the current state of Lightning is if you're running a Lightning node, let's say you're running a Raspberry Blitz, you can't just simply back up a seed. If something happens to your node, we like to joke about boating accidents, but if you have a power surge and it creates a hardware failure and your node collapses, right now what we have is, the closest thing we have is this thing called static channel backups, which is actually a file. It's harder to back up than it is a seed. And if you use that, it automatically closes all your channels and sweeps your funds. So you lose all your channels that in a high fee environment, you might have opened them when fees were low, isn't ideal. And we want to move to a direction where backing up a Lightning node is as easy as that.
Absolutely. The one thing that should be mentioned with static channel backups is that you're actually relying on your peer to close on your behalf, which defeats the point of being trustless. If you're basically telling your peer, hey, I forgot my state, please close so I can get some money back, he'll just pull out the gun and tell you 90% of the funds you had before he will collaborate. Luckily, all of the implementations currently implement which is exactly this collaborative and gentleman's agreement that enables us to recover by counting on the niceness of our peers.
But that is an important distinction. And yeah, again, one thing that is confusing for new Lightning users is everyone tends to be used to just having to maintain your seed phrase on metal or on tissue paper if you're an insane person and are going to go into a boating accident situation. But again, on Lightning, it's not enough. You have to, in order to be able to recover your funds, you have to have your seed phrase, and then you also have to have this file, which is your static channel backup, which you have to update every time you change state on any of your channels. And it's a bit onerous. And again, if you do end up having to do one of those, the sort of nuclear option to recover your funds, as Christian just said, it is a trustful claiming of those funds. You're basically saying, I have no idea what's happening. I got a lobotomy. Please give me my funds back. And then you're trusting all your peers to be like, here's what I owe you. Here's what you owe me. Here you go. So it's risky. Mm-hmm. So
luckily, most nodes on Lightning are super friendly and are out of the box implementation from all the other, implementation teams who have done the nice thing and just do, the nice action when that happens.
For sure. Course, if you have watchtowers, then you're...
Yeah, I actually thought we just talked about how important it is not to lose state and stuff. Like, how does Greenlight handle that? It sounds like you've got watch. Is there anything else?
Oh, so our data center actually has not been allowed to ever go sailing, so that's not an issue there. But we obviously have a database that we operate on behalf of the nodes for our users. This database is highly available, so it's replicated in the same data center multiple times. Should any of the database servers ever go down, it will automatically switch over to another replica. The databases are configured to have a majority quorum. So only once a majority of the nodes have signed off on a change will we report back success. We also have a real-time backup that is being streamed from the database itself into this. It's all running on Google Cloud. So they are streaming this into Google Storage, and we could recover there from there. In addition, part of the take more responsibility for your node strategy is we want to eventually enable users to provide their own watchtowers and stream their own backups in such a way that even if we were to completely disappear, you would still have a complete copy of the database and could basically recover from there. That is part of our export strategy. And I personally think taking on running a watchtower can be much easier and much more approachable than to run the entirety of a node yourself, at least initially. And so we want to encourage users to migrate piecemeal into their own infrastructure and make it their own, basically. Yeah. And then, of course, we have watchtowers for the cases where our peer notices that we're offline and wants to try to cheat us. The watchtowers have pre-signed transactions. Again, these pre-signed reactions that are specific to whatever our counterparty does, we have them canned and ready to go as soon as we detect misbehavior from our peer. Yeah, that's basically the combination of features that we have there. Should be pretty much self-serve for users at this point.
So I got a quick question, Christian. What's up, man? I got a quick question about that. So are you guys allowing just SSH access to it? I'm not sure how to get to it. Do I need to have to use like SyncSpan or something like SpaceChat or something like that to be able to access Greenlight?
Yes, since these are highly specialized nodes and we're very sensitive to the resources we use, the C-Lightning nodes that we run usually run in 15 to 25 megabytes of RAM. We don't want to blow our resource budget by basically allowing anybody just to SSH in. So these are not Linux machines that are exposed to users directly. But the way we do it is basically we spin them up for you, and then we expose a gRPC interface to
the applications that want to interact with the node. In order to spin one of these nodes up, you currently have to be one of our alpha partners, just because we want to slowly onboard people and developers onto the platform in such a way that we can basically dedicate enough time to address any questions that newly onboarded users might have. It is a bit frustrating not to be able to just let everybody on at the same time, but it is for a very good reason that we just don't have the capacity to basically make sure that everybody gets the best experience that they can right from the get-go. Once we have the second or third cohort of partner apps and we have disseminated some of the knowledge and some of the support functionality, then we can start onboarding more and more people. But for now, it's limited to a couple of launch partners, namely LastBit and Sphinx for now. And we will probably announce the next cohort pretty soon, through which you can get your green light node.
Yeah, how does a player become one of the partner applications? You understand what I'm
saying? Yeah, you should basically talk to me or Vivek, and we can see how much support we think you might need, how your use case actually matches Greenlight. Not every application might be a good match. Most people would just want their users to have an app, not build the app.
I got you. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to let that out. Maybe I'll bite someone.
Yeah, lightning is infectious.
And I'm a huge advocate of extreme lightning sports, by the way. If anybody ever wants a really lightning channels while skydiving or bunch of transactions, whatever, come down.
Credit where credit is due. JC, again, is at Zebedee, and he is, I would argue, the ultimate nucleus around which I certainly, and the people and the rest of the crew that founded PlebNet, including JC, got inspired to start messing around with lightning. JC has been an incredible advocate of Lightning and the Lightning Network and LNTX bot by Fiat Jaff and a bunch of other stuff. So JC, we all owe you a huge debt. Thank you for granting me immortality via the bite that you gave me.
That's really thanks for...
Okay, I'm going to spy another block streamer. We got Nick Leary.
Who dat? Also, we are past our originally scheduled, and I'm loving this. I'm down to keep going, but I want to, Lisa, Christian, Vivek, Matt, JC, Lamar, how are y'all doing on time?
I want Eunice Nick to request to speak. I saw some stuff that him and another colleague of ours were working on called half signature aggregation that could be potentially used to reduce gossip signatures, something like that. It's pretty interesting, but I don't know if he's got the bandwidth.
Yeah, man.
I just want to chill out.
Yeah, if you're out there and you are down to speak, request to speak and we'll pull you up. In the meantime, thank you to everyone who's jumped into this chat. Again, Christian, it's been awesome having you. Matt, Vivek, Lisa. Yeah, this has been one of my favorite ones so far. We'll be doing these. I run these on Mondays and Wednesdays, and we may start doing more of them. But if you're not already following Bitcoin Magazine, do, and you'll get to participate in these in the future.